Oops, oops.
So I was trying to make something that could be in itself. I don't know. You know, I just release it now, and I will see in a few years what it is, because this is always how it is. You never know what it is when you make it. I have had the craziest reaction to my records. Like, the kids are dancing to it. The kids are dancing to Words Are Missing record. It's like the most weirdest fucking record in the world. Like, I sampled a German alphabet and I made beat tracks out of it. And it sounds really odd. Nobody ever made music like that. And now, every day I see kids on Instagram dancing to it. This is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, this is quite cool. So, this is what I'm like thinking. I'm making the music for myself. But also I want to say, okay, I'm 50, whatever. I can still do that. I can do that. You know, I have a right to do that. And I'm giving something to you that's to the best of my ability formed for you to, I don't know, find comfort or some inspiration or something to dance to, or, you know, like something like that. I mean, when I say dance, I'm talking about contemporary dancers, not disco or like club or something. The club is not dancing to my stuff, but the dancers do all the time. They really found me, and it's quite sweet. And so, combination. So some tracks are really also made for the dancers in mind, actually. Few tracks I specifically made for them because I know they will love it.
I can't be on the record saying anything.
What's that sound?
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Proposition sounds intriguing.
Proposition sounds very attractive.
Still give up the proposition.
I tell you, it's a thoroughly sound proposition.
Seems a sound proposition. What brought you here?
Sound is the protagonist.
So my birth name is Antigraje, and that's also my passport name, but I have an artist name called AGF, and you can call me Antje or AG, and my internet name is Poem Producer, and so the internet name is the name that's like maybe now brought to the foreground with, like, you know, calling the album like this. So yeah, name is kind of important.
Control versus intent. Internal harm reduction. What's at stake? Youth clubs. Libraries. Air.
It appears first time on Westernization Completed as a track. Powerful Poem, I'm a Powerful Poem Producer. Poem Producer is a track. And I don't know, I have used it now as internet name for the last 20 years. And somehow I thought to bring it into the foreground now. I've never thought about it before. It just came so clear to me now that I was thinking I'm making like kind of like a closure of this time, and maybe also thinking about my own moment of going back to myself a little bit, because I have now many years concentrated more on to working with, like, in collectives or networks or with people and friends and, you know, collaboratives. And I haven't done a solo record since 2016-17, basically, and I was always waiting kind of a new format to come. Like, I was hoping that somebody comes up with something that we can release music nice, more nice or something, or more rewarding, let's say. And I was, for example, waiting for Resonate Coupe to come through or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was waiting and waiting and nothing happened, and I was and got worse, and then Bandcamp was sold to Epic, and then now it's sold to SongTrader, and got worse and worse, and I was like, okay, it's never gonna happen. We are not gonna be anymore, you know. Yeah, and so I thought, like, let's go, and I really wanted to for a long time make something very personal again, and also I don't know, just like a new calibration to my own artistic language or something, and also referencing back to where I come from and things like that. So this was a little bit the idea. That's why I called it like that.
And it's the 20th anniversary of Westernization.
Exactly.
Completed.
Pretty much exactly. Yeah, the record was released in the US by Othlong Moosorg. It was a really cool little label from San Francisco at the time, with Kit Clayton and Sue Costabile. And they back then really supported me when I was actually like nobody. And so I'm really grateful for them. And actually, I'm coming back. I'm coming to the US in 2 weeks, and I'm going to play a show with Sue in Philly. That's my first time in Philly, and also playing New York and Boston. But in with Sue, I'm going to play a show in memorial of that, you know, which basically helped me a lot to be who I am, because yeah, I also got a prize for that record back then, and some attention, like record covers, and that was quite something, like unexpected, you know. It's like really, it is very weird stuff I'm making, you know, like if you think about like what else other people do, and I like it, but it's kind of cool that it cut that way, you know, through in some ways, got some respect or some attention or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Ars Electronica is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, I'm a freelance artist and I do everything I'm offered. If it's kind of like making sense and being like reasonably paid or something like that. And even if it's not paid, but I do a lot of volunteering too. But it's always like kind of, how do you call this? Negotiation, what to do with my time and with my ideas, and where am I? Where when I go, and I always try to find some sort of like middle way, because I also have to survive and, you know, pay my bills, and I have a child, so I have to pay reliably stuff. So you know, this combination of playing shows and like making decisions that support me economically, and then also decisions that are really on my chest and artistically necessary for me to do. And so yeah, I'm being really offered things. So for example, CTM in Berlin and Nusa Sonic invited me to do something in Indonesia, and they asked me what I want to do, and they were like suggesting, you know, to work with women. And I said, yes, I want to work with women. I want to make a feminist camp. We worked out the ideas and then we did it. And this is how it mostly works. So people come to me, invite me with a budget or whatever, and then we develop the idea and we are doing it. And this is how mostly the work is done. And it's really beautiful when it works. And of course, sometimes it doesn't work, and it's really also quite hard. But I have, in terms of female pressure, for example, this is purely volunteering, like volunteering networking. There's no money involved whatsoever. But since female pressure kicked through a little bit, maybe 2013, with the first fact studies, where a team within female pressure started counting and basically collecting facts about gender in the music, in our music scene, like the electronic arts. Since then, I've done a few projects also within Female Pressure with others together that have been a little bit bigger. You know, like for example, Visibility Campaign, when we were collecting women in photos of women in studios while they work. I thought it was really a good beginning to look at the work aspect and of us not being like purely, you know, promotional entities, but actually we're also workers. And then the Rojava Awareness and Solidarity Action I initiated and also curated and kind of facilitated, and was also influenced by actually the success we have started having with Female Pressure. And then the success of this Rojava campaign, which was quite remarkable to me. We even had a big record of the year or half a year or something in Fact magazine and stuff. It was quite big. So I was impressed about what's possible. And so I felt encouraged to work more like that. And then also started doing Recon. I don't know how much you actually know what I've done the last 3 years. I worked mostly on Recon org. And I also had a grant for that, like a Finnish grant to make it. It's kind of like, it is about political sound and political listening. And I'm commissioning artists and thinkers and all sorts of people to make specific work for that. So this has actually been my main focus the last 3 years. So I have several concepts there: feminist sonic technologies, song as technology, audio collectiveness, and just land acknowledgement. Like we're making new, or I don't know, new is maybe the wrong word, but trying to find that new language, you know, different language, other language which hasn't been yet co-opted and taken away from us, basically.
-on.org. Break on. Like reconnaissance. Click. Listen forward to it.
And then I've been quite often invited to do these sonic wilderness camps or like facilitation of sound groups, which I've done in now many places as well. And for example, in Indonesia, it was absolutely one of the highlights of my life to be there with these women in the rice field and make this work. I mean, this is just still some of my favorite pieces. And also the one we did in this pine forest, which is now on the record. And it's actually the only collaboration I have on the record. Because I wanted it to be a solo work, but this I kind of felt it belongs there because it has been really setting this field up for me. Where can I move as an artist? Like, okay, how much can I risk to go away from like the traditional song structure or the album or like playing shows or touring and like all that stuff, which I also did, you know, for many years. I mean, I'm now 25 years in or something, at least. I don't know, I started 96. Yeah, 96, my first record with Laub, this German band. Mm-hmm. And since then I've been doing this and basically running. Like, you know.
Diese Melodie verfehlt, zieht dein Kämpfer her. Leisen trag ich dich auf Gleisen, die noch nicht verlegt. Folge mir meiner Wortspur.
Yeah, these are also all included, but the main idea about Sonic Wilderness is with this concept we started actually in 2015 in Kilpisjärvi in Bio Art Society Camp, where we were thinking about acting like it is a little bit like we're acting like we're already free, or like we are wild, or we are, you know, that kind of thing, and thinking about sound like this. And the main idea is to go outside and actually work in the field, or work in public space, or work in with the sonics of wherever you are at. And for example,
we are sitting in a forest together, 10 of us. We're musicians, sound makers, noise makers, poetesses, singers, dreamers, women. We're sitting in a forest and we're breathing with the trees. We're treeing. We're playing frequencies along the huge pine trees of Jogjakarta, Javan Pine Forest.
And that is so endless, you know, like whatever, you can go in a forest, you make, you know, you make tree music, or you go into the blueberry field and you make blueberry techno, or you go into the rice field and this kind of chant, it's like women's chant came out of us. It was so perfect. We took the piece to the stage when we played, then end of the workshop, we played a show and we played this exact piece there. That was really beautiful, and it's kind of a form of composing in my opinion. Like I was thinking, okay, if we are like, or I'm an electronic musician, right? I mean, I come up with, I became a musician through software and through MIDI and through sound processing and through, you know, all that stuff. And also the way where software has been going, like really super commodified and super grid, and like everything is like, so you know what I mean, like it had to break for me. I had to break out of this wasn't real. It was exciting to be able to make that kind of music by myself, which in the past I thought required, I don't know, a producer and a studio and and like this bedroom thing was great in the 90s, but after that's been done, I felt, oh wait a minute, like this is not, I'm not here to compose for this grid, you know, or compose for this like keyboard or, yeah. And I've always worked with like recordings and field recordings, and but never in this kind of like precious way. More like really in a way that it's my surrounding, it includes my body, it includes my voice, it includes my politics, it includes, you know, everything. So this is how we kind of carved this out, or also like thinking about as sound or composition is growing. It's not something we are like writing on a piece of paper and notate and then somebody has to play it, or we're putting it on a grid in the software where, you know, then it's like played back a million times the same. You can filter it a little bit or whatever. Like, no, we're thinking about that. We're also in our approach to make music grow. Like, and that's very much in actually influenced by radical mycology, which I studied maybe in the 2010s a lot, and which is also in the Solidicity record, and maybe already in the contribution to evolution. So there I've put these themes very much in front, and I also did some specific commissions around mushrooms and music and stuff. And outside I worked with instrument builders, and we had like great camps, and people were so innovative, you know, like think about mycelium as a score and these kind of things. For example, I once got the Berghain crowd absolutely quiet hum my mycelium score quietly in like no PA in the Berghain to open the CTM 2016 or something. It was so beautiful. But so this is kind of what I've been concentrating on the last years, you know, like break the grid, break quantization. Yes, we are people who sample and who use recording devices, and we use digital processing, and we're using what are we using, yeah, looping and things like that, but this is just this is not the music. That's just a means, you know what I mean? So yeah, this is what I've been trying. And in this record as well, like Poem Producer, I wanted to avoid all sorts of quantization, grid, tempo. I don't think many tracks have tempo at all, maybe one or two. I have worked a little bit with tempo because I came from the MPC, but I have avoided it mostly, and I have mostly played real time live, my own feeling, and I'm not a trained drummer or timekeeper or something. So just think about it as a human technology of us being able to make rhythms that are maybe not rhythms in a way that they are, how do you say it? The rhythm of drummers or people who, it's kind of weird how the fascination of the machine has, like, you know, I don't think drummers in the past drummed like that. You know, nobody. I mean, they would, like, drummers would go up and down tempos, and, you know, if they wouldn't feel it or whatever, there would, like, be so much movement in timing and in, you know, it's just the machines made us these kind of like half robots already. This is not okay. So I'm doing something else than that. But of course, I'm a digital musician and I'm a computer composer or whatever. I cannot play any instrument properly except maybe voice or something.
Covering the planet, lightning, periphery, skin, design pattern, fungi, body, we must follow the logic, resistance, bacteria, electrical fluctuation, stimulation.
Yeah, the syncing and stuff. Yeah, it's equally pitch. I mean, yeah, I also work a lot with dissonance, and I adore dissonance. And I also, for me, dissonance is an absolute political. Yeah, and especially in our time, I have this amazing book by Susan Bickford. It's called, like, Citizenship, Dissonance, and Democracy or something. It's her only book from the 90s. It's a really good book. I don't know. It's stunning how she talks about political listening in a way that we, how we can handle to listen to something we disagree with, and how, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's, I've been thinking about this so much, and I think dissonance is in a way really, and also words, you know, like, I'm aware that I'm using words, and it can be so embarrassing already on bastinization, you know. I'm aware that there is some super embarrassing stuff on it. And I've always wanted to try. I always wanted to try. And don't be afraid of that's gonna happen, you know? Like, yeah, and also not go into, like, this typical either. I mean, I can anyway not rap, but like, you know, try also to go outside of the rhythmic storytelling we are used to, or we are, like, allowed to like, or whatever, you know? Like, push a little bit there. Actually, I started doing this live as well. This has been now maybe a year or something that I started live to also mostly talk, but in this kind of, like, ambivalent way of talking in poetry and breaking it down and singing, and, like, mostly making language in real time with people. So this kind of thing, I think, because I wanted to play more live, like, less machine, I was thinking to try that, and I think I'm getting quite somewhere. I had a show 2 weeks ago in Switzerland, like, kind of last minute. They flew me in because somebody dropped out, and I was supposed to play at 2 a.m. and eventually I played at 3 a.m. and they wanted text from me, and I want that too. I want to do this now. And so it was really incredible, like, after Dream Crusher and The Matriarch and what's this other band?
Kill Altars.
Kill Altars. After these three,
they were touring with Dream Crusher.
Exactly. After these three, I played in a 500 capacity space with people sitting there in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., completely like in the light. I didn't have any fog, just like normal light. And I started playing and talking and like speaking with them and playing some music and some sounds. And like, it was amazing. It was really magical. And they were like, what the fuck is that? But then they were also really listening. It was the day when we were supposed, the day after we were striking for Palestine. And I was like, okay, we cannot actually play but this is a vulnerable space already. So what do we do with that? So I just talked and it was really moving, honestly. The show was so amazing. And it had some kind of aggression also, or people were really standing in my face and I was like speaking in their face. And I felt this was really something that made something happen. I don't know. It was also very different than what everybody else does. You know, like, it's kind of vulnerable to say things. Like, you know, like say things that are pre-rehearsed or something. And they're also not necessarily personal. I'm not talking about me. You know, I'm talking literally about the world. It's quite interesting at the moment to do this. And I hope it's a contribution to, you know, where we can be going or something. I mean, more mother or people like that, they have strong words and that is like, she does that too, actually, often, yeah. Yeah, she does that too. She has her tracks, but also she says things, yes. But yeah, so I'm experimenting with language and reaching people with different words for something that we all should remember or something like that. You know what I mean? I started in German, my work. The first records I released were completely German. And then I started to travel internationally. That's the story. It's like more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I was really proud that I was using German language in electronic music. And I was actually quite, how do you say, people hated it. Many people hated it. Because nobody did, like very few people did that. And it was very uncomfortable for Germans to mix up this kind of like instrumental techno music with like, or whatever, it wasn't techno, but like post-techno, whatever, like internet techno, I don't know. And I felt really brave because coming from the GDR, I was raised with German language songs. It's really important for me. I loved this tradition, which was also state sanctioned. So we had to sing in German, you know, it was like a quota and stuff like that. And all the bands I loved were singing German, and I have a very strong love for that kind of song making. And back then it was still rock music, but whatever, the lyrics were the lyrics, and I'm still fascinated by it. And actually, funny enough, I just visited one of my favorite text songwriters from the GDR just this summer. It's very moving, like a very famous writer, and we spoke 2 hours. It was so amazing. So anyway, I was really proud on using German, and I think it also in the beginning was kind of interesting for the English space. They kind of liked that somebody was doing that, but Germans mostly were really alienated by that. And but I was doing my thing. I was also really into writing German lyrics, and I think I was also good at it in some ways. There was some scene in the West, a little bit like indie scene, which did that too, and I didn't fit there in either. So it was kind of like East Germans were completely off the table for these in this time, like nobody listened to their stuff. And then I started to travel internationally so much, and I more and more started to speak English. I couldn't speak English until I was 30. Oh, wow. Like I had Russian in school. I spoke really bad. And then, and still on westernization, I speak really bad. You can hear how bad I'm speaking. So I was like, okay, whatever. Like, this is the world. I'm going through the world. They asked me to speak English. Everybody speaks English. You know, you go to Italy, you go to Slovenia, you go to Mexico. I went to all these places and everybody speaks English with me. And I started to speak more and more English. And my partner, we spoke English. And so my world changed into this English world. And then I was like, okay, at this point, then I was making my first solo record, Head Slash Bauch. And this is still 50-50 mixed up, very few English. And it's also not very vocal heavy or like text heavy record, but some I'm mixing it. And then when I wanted to make, and that was the key situation with Westernization, that, okay, I made Westernization completed and I made it for the world to understand me as an East German Aussie. Mm. You know, we're called Aussie or Zoni. Mm. Like, I wanted to tell the East German story in the music, like rappers tell their story coming from the hood or whatever. You know, I wanted to tell it this way it was hip hop influenced. And I wanted to say, okay, I didn't want to make hip hop, but I wanted to tell as honest and as real and embarrassing from this point of view, coming out of this commie land into the West, and how the commie land was, and how I'm dealing with this West thing, you know? And that's how I did Westernization completed. And then, to my surprise, it was really, people really responded to it. And then I started touring it, and actually I had really quite success with this record. I was touring the world, and maybe least in the US, kind of, you know, or in English-speaking spaces, but I was everywhere. Japan. I went everywhere with this record. It was quite interesting. It was still indie and small things, you know, small fees and stuff. I wasn't at all famous or anything, but I think people were interested in this. And from there, it stayed mostly. I did many records without saying a word. For example, Solidicity, I don't think has many words, or Words Are Missing has not many words. There's many records where I'm not using a specific language at all. Even Beatnadel, I don't know. Or Beatnadel does. Beatnadel, I'm also using both. I'm doing German and... But yeah, now I'm working in the West for so long, and I'm living in Finland completely speaking English here. My Finnish is still quite bad, and I speak mostly to nobody. Like my partner, you know, it's like Finland is really empty. Correct. So yeah, and my work is in English. I work all over the world. So, you know, and I'm also thinking, maybe, okay, even if the UK and the English cannot, and the Americans can't really handle my accent or whatever, my bad English or my mistakes or my off things, it doesn't matter, because this is the reality for, like, I don't know, for a huge part of this world. You have to speak English. And and this is especially for the East Bloc, like all these people, like, yeah. And if you don't study in the US, you speak shitty English. It's just like that. And I was thinking, yeah, that's me, you know, like, that's it. And this is how it came together. And now, it's just my work language. Imperfect,
yeah.
You know, it's breaking it down also. Yeah, and then also already in Westernization completed, I was thinking and starting to use language even extra broken. Like, I was deconstructing it, and then I was doing this like poem producing technique, which is like layering a lot of text and then basically editing the poem afterwards. I'm singing, performing, speaking, text I've written or jotted down or copy or whatever, found text. And then just in the editing process, basically in the production process, the poem comes together, the song comes together, and then the final is going to be made. So this is how I've been working for a long time now. And this is also a form of poem making or language. Kind of a random thing, but also I don't know if you have ever recorded vocals or something, but if you record vocals, it is quite interesting which words work and which words sound cheesy or sound wrong in a certain context. And you could not even think that, because sometimes you don't know where do they go. And it's just, there's some words you cannot really sing or use or speak in a certain context. They're either, yeah, they're easily cheesy or something. Mm-hmm. And that kind of process, you cannot easily make it in the experimentation. You have to do it afterwards, like kind of censorship or like production, basically. Yeah, so this is the poem producing part also, you know, like it's a kind of a production method. Mm-hmm. And many of the tracks now also on the record are made like that, which have more text, basically, and even Skin in the Game or something. For example, Skin in the Game, which is, I think, the second track, I made it live. I made it live with people in the audience, and it came out of the live moment, and then it developed over the time, and then I performed it here in the studio, and then I re-edited it, and I shaped the track more like in different ways, and this is some sort of production stuff, but it's not like classical songwriting, like how you would write a song. And only then when I had Logic easily in a laptop available, because I started with Commodore 64 and Supertrack, and then Atari Numbers, and you know, like stuff like that. But then when I had a laptop and I had Logic, since then I could do this home producing.
I see.
Which I think is kind of like my thing, and I really like it. I find always new ways to go with it and learn, and it became easier because technology is more easy available now. I think I'm also influenced two ways, also in production, because I have started very early using MPC in my production, and I still use MPC in production. So I use now iMPC from iPad even, but I still have all the MPCs here, and I'm really fluent at it. Like, it's a hip hop machine. It's a beat sequencer. So although I've never made hip hop music, but I actually produced also a rap record in 2004 or something with a rapper from Berlin. I'm mostly inspired by the language and the skillful interrelation of the music and the rapping and the rhythm and the meaning, and mostly actually from the honest storytelling, like the really, I think maybe because I come from the GDR and I was this, like, you know, when the wall came down, we were nobody, we had no money, we had like, they gave us $100. I didn't even know what to do. I didn't even know how to live in this world, you know, like how to pay rent and shit like that. I felt the power that came from hip hop in these stories, like how people start, for example, bragging and, you know, hyping themselves up and like giving themselves like energy to be strong or they're proud on their roots and things like that. This has really influenced me, and I love this about hip hop, to say, yeah, these are my roots, this is where I'm from, and this is all I have, and that's why I'm proud on it, and fuck you all. You know, that kind of thing was really, really helping me also. And I was very inspired by that, and kind of thought about how this applies to me when I was like in East Berlin, you know, with no money, working during the day, making tracks in the night, like that kind of thing. And this is somehow that was the inspiration. And I was really thinking, how can I talk about East Germany, which nobody gives a fuck about? It's going to be forgotten. Soon nobody is alive anymore. Like, you know, like, how can I talk about that stuff that existed? My parents were born into it. It was a whole world. You know, people tried to make communism shitty, but they tried. So I wanted to make it, how do I bring it? And so hip hop helped me to find a way, although I never wanted to, I cannot rap and I would never do that. This is, it's not my music. I don't have the right to do that. But I wanted to have, I learned from it, and I wanted to have the references in there, here and there. So to say, you know, and where I come from, you know, it's like that. Like, it's, right. It was kind of like a poetic play with the recipes the rappers were putting forward. And I was very influenced by also some writing about hip hop, even like Jay-Z's book or something, you know, like at the time was interesting for me to think about how he explained his rhyme and or his metaphors, and you know, even I mean the power of Nicki and like in some of her tracks, early stuff was just amazing. So I was a little bit boring this power for my own little weak position, because there's literally nobody doing what I'm doing. I don't know anybody. If you do, please tell me, because I'm alone with this. So I was like manning up to do, you know, like hip-hopping up to do this, but of course not copying a technique that's not mine, but I was trying to find something else. But it definitely played a role. And yeah, I have for years now tried to find ways to program different music or write different music in terms of beats and stuff. So I'm always, you know, I'm using mostly my voice. I think since the last 10 records, mostly it's my voice who's actually making the beats. And I still sometimes use bass drum or snare or clap or something, but really mostly not. And on this record, not at all, I think. I would say there's no snare on this record. What is there?
And you're using Max MSP?
I do use it at times, but actually not even in this record so much. I have mostly recorded everything in real time. Ain't furious, man, these bitches delirious. All these bitches inferiors. I just pimp my interiors. I just pick up and go. Might pick up a hoe. Might give conversation if you kick up the dough. Never mind my money. Never mind my sex. Every bitch wanna be me. You can find them in sex. Pink Friday 2 minute. Super bass triple black. When you see me, you're howling. Just admit that I'm Yeah, I was thinking to. I wanted to make one anyway, because for me, it's still the most powerful form of art. I'm even saying this on my Twitter quote now. Like for me, the record, the album, is the most powerful piece of art for me personally. Okay, I like paintings and I like sculptures and I like media art, whatever. But performance, ballet, everything can be good, but. What impacts me personally the most is an album of a recording artist making something. So I still admire this, it's, you know, and that's why probably I'm doing it, because I wanna. And so I was thinking about to make a new album, and I was thinking, what can I do? What I have, you know, where am I going from here? Like, it seems like sonically we have explored almost all the corners of physical possibilities. Like, we bend everything, like, you know, speed, pitch, like everything. We went so many ways, and it's like, where can we still go? I was thinking, and what have I done not yet? And what would I like to do? And I was like thinking about this, and I've been thinking about bass a lot. And what bass played a role in my music, and how it carries me and my voice, and also the field recording sometimes. And so I came up early with this idea, maybe I should make a record where I actually put more emphasis on bass. It's not just like something in the second or third or fourth or fifth, you know, consideration of making a piece, but maybe it's the first. So I approached the record a little bit from a bass point of view. And I was thinking to use bass and language and voice and field recordings, but also kind of like little things. Like I was thinking, really, I was drawing these out and I was making these like scores, which I could then use to make it. And this is how I started. And then I started the bass and it was very hard. Everything sounded ridiculous. And I worked actually for 2-3 years on this, very slowly. Like when I started thinking about my bass record, bass poetess, you know, like I'm the bass poetess, I'm gonna make this bass poems. That's how it came. Yeah. And then,
this is my process.
And from there, I felt, oh my God, this is really hard. You know, I was actually struggling a lot. It was very hard to make this record, to make it as good as I wanted it to be. And I also wanted to finish it at some point. I wanted to bring it now to this 20 years anniversary. I wanted to finish it. I wanted to, because I'm not somebody who's like forever dwelling on my stuff. You know, I'm also happy to just let it go. And then maybe it's bad. Okay, I tried. I really tried. So this is what I did. I just went for it. And I also started to do these outdoor walks where I would be outside and record in the forest or wherever I would be, here on the island or even other places in the plane. I would record, and I took these also in the production. For example, on Sideness, and maybe it's the fourth track, I'm banging onto a garage door here of a airplane cover. Like, you know, like something that's in my neighborhood, in my very reduced neighborhood. It's mainly forest, but like there's also an airport here. And so I was banging this door and I was like fascinated by the sound. So I played the tree trunks. I was making a piece about deforestation last year, and I spent a lot of time in the forest, and I was playing the tree trunks with other tree trunks and made like rhythms and stuff like that. So it's also on the record. So I wanted to bring a lot of things in, and and then this is how it was shaped, basically. And why now? Yeah, a little bit to make a counterpoint to Westernization Completed, like after 20 years, but also I wanna make art sometimes, you know? Like, I'm making art all the time, but it's often in service of a crew or in service of a project or a curation or an agenda, maybe even, you know, like I want to talk about feminism, or I want to argue that this song is a technology, or I wanted to make something really nobody would make otherwise. So that's how it came together, and wanted to free myself. It's a little bit like a present even to myself, you know, to take the time, to take the respect to my own craft, to take the, I've done so much audio, I cannot believe it. I had to yesterday write my CV new, like update my CV after, I don't know, a year or something. I was shocked. What? How much stuff I do, you know? I'm writing for dance, for circus, for all sorts of stuff. It's really a lot of material. And of course, not everything is genius, but, you know, I'm trying. So I wanted to give my own self as an artist that kind of space to do this and be respectful to my own person or something, maybe almost, yeah. It's that. It's like, it's a respect to myself. And for example, I have these discussions with Sasso all the time, you know, Delay. Like, we are, like, where are we going from here? Like, the music industry is trash. Nothing works. You know, everything is like, I don't know, social media or whatever, right. You know, like, it's just like, I mean, I have that outlet of communication in my work already. Okay, I can do that. I can talk like with you now. I can talk. I can be online. I can say something on Twitter. Not everybody can do that, and it's really quite bad at times where we're at now, as recording producers, as recording artists. So, yeah. It's also easier than never, but still. This is totally, it was a total performance, and it was totally, it had already a rhythm, and I had already in mind that I'm making a piece. I wasn't making an entire piece, and then I just took it into the track. And the tree trunk thing actually opened, like, is the layer to the whole track. And also this one, for example, I was running afterwards through Max MSP, through my patch, and I was making this like very like granular layers, which then kind of sink into the track. Yeah, no, it's totally performance. And I think even I'm not a drummer and I'm not aspiring to be one, and I have never, I do have a rhythm, and I respect my rhythm, you know. I respect, I'm a vocalist, so it's kind of like your voice does, as long as your breath lasts, as long as you can like get air, like you're able to make some sort of rhythm, like I'm talking to you right now. So it's like, this is a rhythm. And this is rap, basically. People talk, and then you do this into when you do this into music. In this record, I did exactly that. I performed every track in real time to another, and then layered and layered. So these tracks don't have, except maybe one or two, have where I use MPC. They don't have a grid, or then I'm performing. I'm performing, and of course, because I'm not a drummer or something, I have to sometimes cut stuff, and I have to move stuff, or I just throw it out, mostly like shitty bits, so to speak. But I'm performing it totally, and actually this is what I want to do more and more, also live now again, play less and less from the computer, or no computer anymore. I don't have computers with me anymore at all, but use more microphones, use more real-time things, use the body, you know, be like be more. And I can use, in our days we have so great technology, like even the chaos pad I'm using to manipulate my voice, or the iPad where I can like just trigger samples quickly, and it's not a heavy machine or something, you know. It's like, and it can be a simple thing. So yeah, performance does play a role, and I'm learning all the time. I just managed in Barcelona, in February, I played a Xenakis dedication, and I only used voice the first time, like nothing else and nothing pre-recorded. It was so scary, and it was so beautiful. It was really beautiful. I was in a church, really, you know, massive, like kind of scary thing to do, but it went really well. And for like me being like a, you know, digital composer or somebody who's always having this like crafted material around, yeah, it's quite interesting to go away from it now and remember that we can do this, you know, not as organized, but like we can do this. I also have this this thing which I call myself sound sculpture, and maybe I think maybe this is something I came up with, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. And I think maybe it's close to me, like, because I'm not a classical musician and I'm not interested in doing proper music, as you can hear. It's actually not my interest to make anything that functions in a music space like that. Like, mm-hmm. I was thinking about this a lot before, not that I don't feel appreciated. I actually do feel appreciated. I'm surprised quite often that I'm appreciated with that weird stuff I'm doing. Like, sometimes I'm myself, like, shocked that people, you know, out of the nowhere, some kid somewhere in the middle of nowhere says, I really like that piece of yours. And it's like the craziest shit ever. And I'm like, really? Like, this is weird. You know, this is beautiful to me. Like, this is amazing that I can do these like very fantastical things with my mind and realize it into sound. And then somewhere in Korea, a girl, South Korea, dances to it the most craziest way and wins a prize in some competition. Like, that happened, for example. And it was so incredible to me that this happened, you know? I'm stunned by that. So yeah, I guess I came to this work by accident, because the wall came down. You know, I wasn't supposed to be a musician or something like that. You could also not study that, like in our days. You know, you had to kind of do it. And when I started programming music and you know, learning about MIDI and all the synthesizing possibilities, I was alone in a room with manuals, you know, trying to figure out these words. And so it was this like gradual development into this person. And then I played in bands and I had like all these experiences with like other people and stuff. I played even with classical musicians. This Craig Armstrong time was so influential to me, you know, when I was working with this super famous composer. But when I was thinking, what can I do? What actually can I do? Like, why am I even having a right to do that? You know, like, make records like that and be this, like, person. I was thinking maybe it's closer to sculpting something, like sculpting this material of sound. And it's kind of like, not sound design, but design is the wrong word, because I'm not designing, I'm creating. And I'm trying to be as free as possible. This is my, what's the word, allegiance to art. You know, to be as free as possible. And then from there, I'm becoming that producer. You know, of course, you're right. There's all these steps. There's the step of making an idea, streaming something up, then being like really free to record it, then noticing it's completely embarrassing, you have to cut half of it away, and then you become this producer where you're like bringing it into a form that's acceptable, or it's loud, and it's like pang, and it's like, you know. Yeah, so I'm having all these little, I think this is what I am now, this kind of, and that's why it's poem producer is quite nice, because I don't know how this word sounds to you as a native English speaker. To me, it's actually not a very nice word. But it's not a nice word, poem producer. For example, bass poetess or something sounds cooler, but somehow it became this thing, and I was just, and that's a hip-hop moment to say, I am a powerful poem producer. I mean, this is so hip-hop, like, it's also very silly. No hip-hopper would ever say that, but to claim something like weird, like, so, yeah, this is something I was thinking.
Maybe 'cause we don't like rude.
Because it's for 20 years my internet name, and I was thinking, fuck it, like, I have to do something with this, you know? Yeah, and it's true that it has this German thing. I didn't realize the industrial part actually at all. That's very interesting, but now I see it. Yeah. I was more thinking as a music producer, you know, or like a
art producer. Sure.
But yeah, it's of course, it could be there. It's cool. That's actually cool. Yeah, that was also why I made the album. I wanted to put something out there. And if it's just for us, our crew, you know, our few, I don't know, 400, 500,000 people in this world who are know what we're doing. It's not so many. I don't know, maybe it's 10,000. I don't know. Who really know, you know, what that is. So it's, we needed two. And these are some of the most creative people. So, I mean, yeah, I think I make music more for artists, actually, than I gave up on hoping that, like, you know, normal people can handle it. Like, normal is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Like, that it's going to be, I'm just, it's okay. I think I make music for other artists, and it's good.
Thanks for sharing the record with me, and congratulations
on
the record and on 20 years of Westernization, and keep doing the thing. Yeah, so it's beautiful, and it deserves praise. So,
thank you.
I'm glad I was able to talk with you and include you in
the series. Nice to meet you finally. Yeah,
likewise.
I only know your Twitter handle.
Yeah.
I like to keep my eyes open and move my ass around big time. I like to trust. In a dead sense, I'm a rare, contemporary, westernized, late girl, which is free.